This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48, Wednesday, the 16th of February, and you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, earlier this week, the government released a report on key findings of the Malaysia Census Report 2020, showing that our population has grown by 1.7% in the last decade and now stands at 32.4 million people. Overall, the numbers show that there are 8.2 million households with an average of 3.8 members. There's also a slight sex imbalance with 101 men for every 100 women. But in Putrajaya, this is a fun fact, the country's administrative capital, the ratio is 96 men for 100 women.
I wouldn't say that was so fun for some people, but the census also showed that there were 2.6 million non-Malaysians in the country, which make up 8.3% of the population. Perhaps the most alarming of the figures released was that in terms of the age groups, 10.4% of the 32.4 million comprised those above 60, indicating that we are heading towards an ageing nation.
And according to Prime Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Ismail, the population of young Malaysians had dropped from 26.6% in 2010 to 24% in 2020. So what do all these data points suggest and what are the key trends that will affect Malaysia moving forward?
For more on this, we have on the line with us Dr. Jeffrey Williams, economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Good morning, and thanks for joining us again. So let's start with this census data in general. Tell us, how does it help government craft better policies?
Okay, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Actually, the census data is really important because it's going to set the foundation for government policy planning for the next 10 years. So it tells us, of course, the total number of people and some of the basic demographics that you've just mentioned, which are interesting. But it's also telling us really the resource needs that the population will be looking forward to in the next 10 years or so. And that's going to help to guide government policy. For example, if we look at how many people are in the younger age group, that will tell us how many schools we need to build, what will be the demand for teachers. If we look at people in the older age group, for example, that will tell us about the prospects for pension funds and their what we need to do to address poverty in old age, but also healthcare, because people in older age groups have a bigger demand for healthcare. So this is going to give us some of the trends, which are going to tell us where the main infrastructural investments are going to be. It can also, of course, tell us where the people are living, whether they're living more in towns and cities. And so we need to look at housing, affordable housing, infrastructure, public utilities in cities and so on. And because these are long-term planning things, which require a great deal of investment over many years, it's the population data that tells us mainly, that gives us the best idea of what we need to be planning for. So it's really very important in that sense.
So older, more urban, smaller households. You know, when you think about government policy, do you think government policy should spend its time catering for this change or even try to shift it back to something a bit more younger and more balanced?
I think government policy shouldn't try to adjust population balances. It should respond. The point about population data is it's actually amongst the best type of data to forecast. And really what we need to do is to try to understand how the population is evolving so that the government can respond effectively and respond positively toward it, rather than trying to go into some sort of social engineering or forcing people to live in particular places for particular reasons, for example, trying to stop the urbanization process or something like that. Generally speaking, we would want the population to evolve freely, and then government policy is to take should be planned according to how that's panning out in practice, and not try to direct it, but try to respond positively to it.
And how does Malaysia's aging population trend compare to the other countries? Is this a global phenomenon, or is there unique factors in Malaysia that contribute to this scenario?
Well, each country has a different age profile. There are many countries where the age profile is moving toward the older group. Of course, in Europe, North America, that's been happening for many years, decades. Here in Malaysia, we are moving from an aging society toward an aged society. And the difference between those two things is in an aging society, the population is getting slowly older. But in an aged society, you will have a very significant proportion of the population which is already in the retirement age group. And what that means is we have to start to plan for that. Now, we know that during the pandemic, we have seen very starkly the under-provision, for example, of pension funds for the older population. And now we know that the older population is actually getting bigger. And so that helps us to understand that being able to respond to the possibility of large numbers of people not working because they're retired, how do they deal with their income? That's going to be something that is really challenging. And it gives us a good idea that that's going to happen. Of course, we also know because of the pandemic about the health system. And we're very keen on health system reform. So we will know from the population data, not just the number of people who are likely to be using healthcare in the future as they get older, but also where are they around the country? And so where should we be putting the health infrastructure and making the investments in hospitals and clinics and so on? And then what type? Do we need large general hospitals or local clinics, mobile clinics in rural areas? And this will be all guided by the population data.
Meanwhile, another fact that came out from the survey is that the urbanization rate in Malaysia also increased to 75% from 71% in 2010, with, of course, the rural population declining in tandem. What are the underlying issues here that need to be addressed?
Well, I think this is driven by jobs. People move into towns because they're really trying to find job opportunities. There are fewer job opportunities in rural areas, particularly in agriculture, for this is a very long-term trend, of course. But the implications are, firstly, there is a bigger demand for housing in rural areas, in urban areas. And we know that affordable housing is becoming a bit of a crunch. And Bank Negara told us just last week that there are issues in terms of affordable housing. So as we know that more and more people are moving into towns and cities, we need to deal with housing provision, infrastructure provision, internet, utilities, and all of those sort of things have to be planned for. But of course, it also means that there are fewer people of working age in rural communities. And so what you would more likely see is decline, economic decline in rural communities. Now, there are implications there in terms of poverty in rural areas and how we can deal with that. Firstly, in terms of finding job opportunities and business opportunities for people in rural areas, but also how do we respond in terms of the infrastructural support for people in rural areas? And as we know, in some parts of Malaysia, particularly East Malaysia, where it's very, very remote, some of these villages are very, very remote, and it's becoming increasingly difficult even to provide basic services like electricity or internet access, for example. So all of that is an implication of the urban-rural divide. And what we're seeing is it's likely to get worse.
And can you give us a sense, how does this translate into economic numbers and economic structure of our country, you know, in the short and long term?
Well, in a very basic way, the larger is the population, the lower is the average income, of course. And what that means is as the population grows, we need to make sure that we are continuing with underlying economic development so that we are making sure that GDP overall is in line with the growth in the population. Now, what we're seeing because of the impact of the COVID lockdowns is we've seen a structural fall in the rate of growth. And so as the population is rising, we need to be able to find more opportunities for jobs. We need to be able to find more opportunities for generating incomes in order to make sure that average incomes and median incomes are growing and are spread equally across a bigger group of people.
Are there policy issues that arise from gender imbalance in the population?
Well, I think that's quite interesting, the gender imbalance, but I think what we need to do is take a look at it. You see, if we look at the number of foreign people in the population, it's 2.6, 2.7 million people. It's nearly, it's about around 8%. Many of these foreign workers are actually men. So if you were to take those out, you might not find that that gender imbalance was as big as it looks. But I have to admit, I didn't look at the granular data for that. But I do think that that may well be a factor. Certainly, as you mentioned, in some parts of the country, like Putrajaya, for example, or in my sector, in the education sector, we certainly don't see that sort of imbalance. We have a very much greater number of women in the higher education sector than men. So it's really a sectoral issue. But it's very, very interesting in terms of empowerment and involvement of women. And we know that female participation in the labor force is slightly lower than it should be here in Malaysia. And so that's an area which would be really very fruitful for us to focus on in the future, I think. Very interesting area for us to focus on.
Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Jeffrey Williams, economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology, helping us understand why census data is so critical and how it could frame economic policies for the future, which is critical because we know it is very revealing in terms of trends. And two very discernible trends. One is our urbanization rate is going to increase. The other one is that our population will increasingly also be more it is an aging one.
Yes. Instead of aging, he said, we are maybe moving towards aged population. So we need to look at a lot of things like pension funds and all these
Social engineering.
Yes, correct.
Social protection, excuse me.
Yeah, for the aged population.
So far, we've heard two kind of conversations and solutions, right? One is the infrastructure required to meet the current demands of an urbanization and aging/aged population. The second is also the policies in place on social protection, because we've been talking about this for a very long time, about how our EPF is just not enough to cover us for retirement. And that's going to be an exacerbated issue with this census data.
Now, the other thing I'm curious, and I don't expect the good Dr. Jeffrey Williams to have an answer, is how much of this data that comes out from the census is actually being used by the powers that be. So whether at the Ministry of Finance, whether it's MITI, PM's office, how much of it is used to craft future economic policies?
And how granular is the data provided to the Ministry of Finance? Because I hope Because I hope they don't just use the same data that we are seeing now, because what we're seeing is a higher level of analysis, right? So there must be another N-2, N-3 level of depth.
I think it's not a matter of how granular the data is, but it's how granular they want to look at the data. So it's the users who are here to, depends on you whether you want to go detail into it or not.
No, it's not depends. They should be
That's right.
I mean, so much work has gone into Census 2020. You know, kudos to the Department of Statistics. It's not an easy endeavour, especially during this time of COVID. It's very informative. It's also useful that, you know, I think I took some lessons home from the numbers, and I hope the government also uses this data. Otherwise, it would be a waste. But let's see, because I want to see, like, for example, the next Malaysia plan. How much of it is based on the census information that we have, right? And for example, is there now going to be a shift in terms of better healthcare, more retirement, more social protection? Questions that we have.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.